Terrific. Well, thank you, Bruce, for that perfect overview. And now to kind of move into more specifics, we have a great mix here to continue the conversation. It's people from state, city, private industry, and from different geographical parts of the United States. Right next to me is Mayor Sam Adams. He is the mayor of Portland, Oregon, and before being elected in 2008, he was the commissioner on the city council. And there on the city council, he was in charge of the Office of Transportation and the Bureau of Environmental Services. And now as mayor, he has been a leader in economic development, in planning and sustainability, education, arts and culture, and transportation. Portland has earned the title of America's most sustainable city, and it is Mayor Adams' goal that it will be the world's most sustainable city. I like how you think.
Thank you.
And next to him, we have Stefan Szabo. He is the Vice President of Operations and Quality for Inficon. It's a private company in Syracuse, New York, that he's going to tell you about that's had stunning and recent success in the export world. And he's going to talk from both a small city in the middle of New York as well as private industry. And next to Stefan is Carlos Valderrama. Everyone seems to know Carlos. I was in L.A. recently, and everybody was talking about Carlos. He is export man, period.
Thank you.
He's had so many different jobs. He set up offices in Latin America and Mexico for the state. He actually ran worldwide exports for the state. And right now, he's the senior vice president for global initiatives for the Los Angeles area Chamber of Commerce, working like this with the mayor on exports.
Thank you.
And next to Carlos is Katie Clark. Katie Clark is the director of the Minnesota Trade Office. So her job is to assist the companies in Minnesota to export. And she has had enormous success with that. She runs these trade trips overseas, which we want to talk about. And basically her job is to promote Minnesota globally. So I've asked each of our panelists to kind of tell us about the export plan. It's very different, as we heard from Bruce, that every metro area wants to build on its strengths. So can we each go down the line? We'll start with the mayor. Talk about what you're up to in your metro area and why it's important.
Well, thank you, and thanks for the opportunity to be here and partner with Perkins Institution on this effort. Our strengths are advanced manufacturing, specifically in everything from Daimler Trucks, which is headquartered in North America in Portland, to Intel, which has one of its largest manufacturing and research and development plant sites in the Portland metropolitan area, to athletic and outdoor gear, Nike, Adidas, Columbia Sportswear, Keen. We also have a strength in open source software, digital development, and then clean technology, sustainable cities. One of our brands is we build green cities. Which allows us to brand a collection of companies that is both products and service based in the sustainability realm. Through this effort, we've identified a key need to both start talking about exports at business startup or when we're doing business retention, and also to ask more of our federal agencies in getting more intelligence abroad so that we can do better matchmaking. With specific firms in specific markets where there's opportunities. We also believe that the work to get our baseline, our goal is, as Bruce mentioned, is to double our exports in the next 5 years. And the strategy that is behind the work that's summarized in the handout for Brookings is a path for us to do that. And we work on a four-county basis. We're putting together a consortium. The president of Tom Hughes is here, president of the Metro Government. We have a four-county, two-state new organization called Greater Portland, Inc. that will be leading the consortium to implement and continuous perfection of this strategy.
Before we move on, can you just walk me through, let's say that there's a company that does sustainable services. They're great maybe you can think of a specific company.
Sure.
And they want to bring this to Canada, Mexico City,
sure.
Somewhere else. What do they do, and how do they go about it with the help of this strategy?
So there is a company called Columbia Green that was part of five companies that we took to Toronto. We worked with the U.S. Commercial Service, ITA, and others to help us figure out which developers that we needed to get in to see. As mayor, I asked to meet with the CEOs. Columbia Green, you know, is, what, six, seven people? But the mayor could get in to see the CEO, whereas the CEO of Columbia Green could never get in to see.
And what does he provide?
The
Columbia Green, what do they do?
Columbia Green is a modular eco-roof company. They struck a partnership with Firestone, and so they do modular eco-roofs in Toronto. We were able to get in to see Walmart, and they're on their fifth eco-roof on Walmart's in Canada. And with Firestone as their joint venture partner, they're now seeing explosive growth. In the last 3 years, it's like, I think, 400%. Business is up 400%. So that's the U.S. Commercial Service giving us intel in Canada, in Toronto, where the building boom has not busted. So it's a good place for us to take our building product firm. The mayor was, I was there, got in to see folks that she, the CEO, would never get to see otherwise. She made the sale, had a joint venture with a credible international brand in Firestone, and now she's on her way.
Perfect. That's great. Sivan?
Sure. I provide a different perspective here. I'm from Inficon in upstate New York, and we're working with our Center State CEO group in developing an export plan. If you look at our business, we do advanced manufacturing. We provide equipment for semiconductor, flat panel display, environmental monitoring. As a management team, approximately 10 years ago, we set on a deliberate path of increasing exports. And over the last 7 years, we've grown our exports about 140%, whereas our domestic growth has been around 2%. So it's been very deliberate on our part to do that. We've increased sales. We're obviously increasing employees, not at the same rate as our growth, unfortunately. Really, productivity drives less employee growth, but sales overall has been great. We've got a great profit-sharing program, so we share profits with our employees. This, as we speak right now, we're actually announcing to our employees that every single employee in our company for last year will get a 20% bonus. 20% profit sharing, and it's 100% based on export growth. Now, the other benefit, if you really look at it, is to our suppliers. A lot of our suppliers, because we're low volume, high tech, we don't get a lot of products from low cost countries. So a lot of our suppliers have grown with us as we've grown. And there's a lot of statistics out there that show for every job that we create, there's three outside and other facilities, and we believe that for us that's probably even higher, and a lot of what we source is within a 500-mile radius of where we are. So a lot of what companies are talking about here in a lot of the regions, export growth isn't just with the companies themselves that are increasing the exports, it's actually the multiplier effect on all the companies in the area and in the United States, and manufacturing is one of those areas that has that effect, you know, a significant multiplier effect on jobs. The other thing that I think that's important for us as a company is average wages. We're probably about double the average wage of most companies in Central New York. Now, part of that is bonus. Part of it's, you know, we provide great benefits.
You're
but
hiring?
At the end of the day, we are hiring. We are hiring. And I think one of the things that we're trying to do is help educate other companies on how they can export. I think one of the things that's out there is just maybe the fear of the unknown or the unwillingness to take risks. If you look at the upstate New York area, we lag most of the other metro areas. About 10% of our GDP is actually exporting. And if you think about it, we're about a one-hour drive north to Canada or a three-hour drive west to Canada, and we don't really tap that from a service standpoint as well. So I focus, obviously, on the manufacturing side, but the service sector is absolutely huge. Also, in the Central New York area, there's a lot of universities, 35 universities within a fairly small geography. Some universities, such as Syracuse University, obviously Cornell, there's a lot of smaller universities, too, that are really focused on engineering. And we need to tap into that and keep those students local and not going back to the big metro so that we can really help grow a lot of manufacturing and advanced manufacturing in our area. So that's really
what percent are you of your products are you selling to Canada?
A very, very small percent. It's under 5%. Our biggest geographies we export to are Germany, Korea, China, Taiwan, a lot of Asia because of what we serve.
So even though you're close, it's still a globalized world. I guess this is my question before we move on. It seems like it's a no-brainer. 95% of consumers in the world don't live in America, right? A lot of people out there with money want to buy things. So why is it taking so many companies so long to say, hey, why don't we export? I mean, there have been planes and trucks and trains and globalized world for a while. So why is it been kind of lagging, it seems? Like you were saying, so many people in Syracuse and even your company's new to the game.
Right. I think it's just the fear of the unknown. There's cultural unknowns. There's, you know, there's no easy way for small and medium-sized companies to just walk into a country and say, I want to go sell into China. Okay, well, what do I do? And I think a lot of the programs, both at the federal and state level, target the bigger companies, or if they don't target the bigger companies, the smaller and medium-sized companies don't know what to do. So one of the things that we're looking to do with Center State CEO is help educate those smaller and medium-sized companies on what to do. You know, we'd like to see more people on the ground in some of these emerging markets that can really help some of these small and medium-sized companies, you know, who are, you know, legal people in those countries. They can help. You know, how do you get access to trade shows? How do you get access to, you know, what are cultural differences? People on the ground in those countries that can really help, as opposed to sitting in Washington or New York or Syracuse trying to help, you know, those companies. I think the more we have resources in those countries we're targeting for growth, the better we can ease the fear of the companies that are looking next.
Well, I think all of us should talk a bit more about this in our own, about how do you mitigate the risk? How do you tell people what products are appealing abroad? When I was talking to some people about this in Chicago, I remember this one woman said that she made over $1 million selling wrapping paper to India that had been mislabeled, like Merry Christmas was spelled wrong. So she couldn't do anything with it in Chicago, but she got $1 million out of sending it to India. They just liked that it was in English, or at least English lettering. So just, I mean, there are people on the ground that need to identify what can you sell abroad. It's not just some of the obvious things.
Sure.
And then how do you go about it? How do you get loans? So we'll talk about that. But for the moment, we'll move on to Carlos in
Thank
L.A.
You. Thank you. Well, our economy is very large. But certainly we wanted to be very target-oriented, and a lot of things that we did was primarily is still for small and medium-sized companies. But before I give you an idea as to what are we doing, I'll tell you, on behalf of the International Business Community of Los Angeles, I want to thank the Brookings Institution for assisting in structuring our export initiatives and strategies. Thank you, Bruce, Amy, Mark Goodman, Emilia, of course, and our good friend Brad McDierman, who was with us for many months, hours, and days. Many emails, many phone calls, and again, with his guidance and support, we're doing good things. Thank you, Brad. You're back there, but I want to acknowledge on behalf of the state and the city. As background, in 2009, the Los Angeles Area Chamber of Commerce, the Office of the Mayor of Villaraigosa and UCLA, we launched a program designed to create employment through export. This was in 2009. This initiative was called, it is still called, the America Business Forum. And this initiative was organized recognizing the four or five following things. The downturn in our economy. There were some areas in Los Angeles and California that unemployment rate was over 13%, in some cases 18%. The state of California, the county, and the city of Los Angeles had really no formal programs for exporters. We also noticed that intense competition from overseas in our markets. But we also look at a couple of opportunities. We look at the solid growth in the Pacific Rim in Latin America in 2009 and 2010. As you remember, the Pacific Rim during that time was growing at a click at about maybe 8 to 9, maybe more. in Latin America, the growth was about 5 to 7%. So we thought, I said, well, in these economic downturns in our home, why don't we go and look those economies that are growing, and maybe they want to buy our products. And also, we looked at the fact that together with the City of Los Angeles and the Chamber of Commerce, we had a number of memorandum of understandings with other chambers of commerce around the world. So we began to say, why don't we link with them together and we work and sell more products to them. So we were very fortunate in 2010, our path crossed with Brookings Institution. Today, with the Office of the Mayor of Los Angeles, Brookings, Port of L.A., the Los Angeles World Airports, UCLA Anderson, USC Marshall, and other partners, we are developing the Los Angeles Regional Export Plan. Now, bear in mind, this plan is primarily for small and medium-sized companies. This plan addresses all the findings, conclusions, and recommendations made by Brookings as they completed the studies in Los Angeles. Very specific goals. We want to increase quality of jobs through exports. We want to support the National Export Initiative, and we want to foster a more export-oriented business culture. The strategies are very simple. We are going to be identifying and targeting export-ready and export-capable firms. We're going to be targeting the Pacific Rim and Latin America. Very important in terms of targeting our markets. I have looked at the website of the U.S. Trade Representative, USTR, and I found that in our region, the Pacific Rim and Latin America, we have 15 free trade agreements. We have 7 framework agreements and 2 trade facilitation protocols. This is a great advantage for us because our exporters want to do business with countries that we have free trade agreements or some sort of agreement because we have an international document that gives us the parameters of how we're going to do business together. And so our companies, perhaps they diminish the fear of international trade, knowing that they're working under the umbrella of free trade agreement in the country. And also, very target-oriented, we have selected, or at least we're trying to identify, the most important sectors in our economy, which is about 13. So we have a plan. Thank you to Brookings. We have our objectives. We have our strategies. Now the implementation. The implementation of this plan will be the responsibility of the Los Angeles Regional Export Council. Members of this council will be export service providers with experience, a proven track record, and a strong reputation of practical programs and professional counseling regarding exporting matters. Operating together as an efficient team, the council will be offering qualified programs and services to export-ready companies in our region. And again, I think I just wanted to give you a summary as to what we're doing in Los Angeles. I hope later we can talk more about our program.
Can you just very briefly tell me what an export-ready company is, like an example? You said you're identifying them. And then tell us what a company is that's not ready.
Well, you know, nowadays we have very limited resources, not only in terms of human resources and funding. We felt that looking for companies that are already in the business, that already exporting to maybe 1 or 2 markets, will be easier to take them into a 3rd, 4th market. And that is what we're going to target, export-ready and export-capable. There are obviously a number of companies that are, maybe you want to call it new to market, that have never exported before. Our resources at this moment are very minimum to deal with companies that they are in this stage of the game. Obviously, we are going to work with them, but the Department of Commerce, the CITDs, and other groups that are there working in the community, perhaps they'll be able to offer a more basic service to these companies that perhaps don't have the experience. But we feel at this moment, with the resources that we have in a very strategic perspective, we want to go with companies and take them into a 3rd, 4th market.
But there are resources that I'm sure we're going to be hearing about in the next panel that the federal government, the SBA, Export-Import Bank have to help. You know, if a company knocks on the door and says, you know, I sell lipstick, like there was a woman in L.A. when we were talking to her, and she wanted to sell lipstick abroad. And now there's a lot of lipstick around the world. Now, why is my lipstick any better? And, you know, isn't it going to be cheaper? And, you know, she started doing some tests, and now they have a huge business because American products, even if they're cost more, can be very, very attractive out there. So anyway, you're going to be hearing about that the next panel, about resources that help people identify which countries that a particular product, whether it's, you know, boards or semiconductors or lipstick, that in which countries it would go to. So Katie Clark from Minnesota, would love to hear about your state view.
Well, thank you. And thank you to the Brookings Institute for inviting me here today and for the amazing partnership that we've had really over the past few years. Our export plan started as the beginning of our metropolitan business plan that Minneapolis-St. Paul focused on with the Brookings Institution. For those of you that aren't familiar with our region, two large cities divided by the Mississippi River, and that river really divides those two cities in many ways. So that metropolitan business plan was focused on how do we coordinate as a region, think about ourselves as one metropolitan area instead of divided cities. When this project came about, the city of Minneapolis reached out to my office, the Minnesota Trade Office, and asked if we would submit an application and partner with the cities to create a metropolitan export plan, and we enthusiastically submitted an application. About 80% of our state's exports come from the metropolitan region, and we saw this as a way to develop an export plan for that part of our state that could potentially create a template that we can use for other parts of our state further down the line. So we started the project by identifying a steering committee. And I think that's one unique part of our plan is that we have the state trade office involved, the governor's office involved, our state chamber of commerce, and then we have the city of Minneapolis, Mayor Ryback, city of St. Paul, Mayor Coleman, and our private-public regional economic development group called Greater MSP, and many other organizations that are involved in our steering committee. Our plan is focused on doubling exports from the region with a particular focus on supporting the SMEs and also selling the MSP, Minneapolis-St. Paul region, to the world. One huge benefit that I see coming from this work is that it's opening up the lines of communication from the local level to the state level to the federal level. And we're figuring out how we leverage resources from the federal level and the resources that we have at the state level and bringing that down to the local level, to the mayors that know the companies in their communities and can help identify the companies that will truly benefit. One quick example, Governor Dayton led a trade mission to Korea this past fall. And because of this export initiative, the city of Minneapolis was aware of this trade mission. Knew of a small company in South St. Paul called Earth Clean that has a biodegradable fire retardant that's more effective than water, and connected them with the trade mission. I learned a little bit more about their business. We were able to arrange an official signing working with our partners in the Foreign Commercial Service at the ambassador's residence in Seoul for this very small company to sign a $4.3 million contract with a distributor in Seoul. And for a startup, that was a huge contract. So just by opening those lines of communication and being able to leverage resources that we have at the various levels, I think we're going to see great impact from this plan.
I'd like both you and the mayor to talk about the importance of these trade missions. When I was based abroad for 14 years and worked in Tokyo, then Mexico City, and London, and very distinct memory of when Virginia wineries came to London to sell Virginia wine. And, you know, England is pretty close to France and a lot of nice wine over there, and it was costly for all the Virginia wineries to go over there. But if they didn't show up and they didn't have big taste tests, they wouldn't have sold anything. And there's about four of them to do big business with the former colony, you know, the former colonists are kind of a big deal in England now. So anyway, I'd just like to hear your view of how important it is to actually go on site with these missions.
Yeah, I think it's hugely important. And part of the story that I always tell businesses in Minnesota and why I encourage companies to come along with us on trade missions is to leverage the governor. Or if it's a sister city visit, leverage the mayor in order to get new business.
How do you feel about being leveraged?
Happens every day.
The governor and mayor can open doors for companies in hierarchical cultures. They can get meetings with chairmen of companies and connect the companies that are on the delegation directly with the business divisions within that large conglomerate and create new opportunities for Minnesota companies and other companies.
So if you're a company and you would like to have the governor or the mayor, you know, take you to Korea, what do you have to do? You just call up? I mean, what do you need? What do you need to prove in order to get on these delegations? I think Governor O'Malley had about 30 different companies go with him recently on one.
Mm-hmm. Well, the practical answer is you have to sponsor their trip because it's very controversial for especially mayors in these tough times to use tax dollars to go on these kinds of trips. So beyond the practical, it's also that pre-work, that intelligence gathering abroad. Businesses, I've been on some really great trade missions, and I've been on some really awful trade missions.
Do tell.
The awful trade missions really lack the pre-work, the intelligence gathering work, and fail to, you know, if a business is going to go on a total flyer, you know, on a total spec basis, and they know that, that's fine. But a lot of businesses won't sign up for those trade missions unless you give them a reason to go, some hope for eventual sales. Now, it does often have to start out in just basic introductions. It's hard to get a contract abroad unless you have some sort of relationship or... So sometimes, like any sales, it takes more than one or two or three trips. But that what I directly related to good or bad trade missions is the pre-work. Who are we going to be meeting with, and are we matching companies up? Are we matching companies to public sector potential sales clients in an effective way?
And what's the lag time usually when you go over before you kind of get results, where you get something signed? Because that is actually when more of those things are signed. It's certainly your constituents or the dreaded media doesn't think you're off in Brussels having muscles, that you're off doing kind of good things, right?
Right. It depends. I mean, you know, if China is our biggest trade partner, Oregon's biggest trade partner. And, you know, I've been to China seven times. And sometimes it's very rare to sign a deal or to see a company sign a deal on the first trip without any pre-established relationship. It usually takes two or three trips. And it helps if you have someone else with you that also does business in Asia, and they in turn can, you know, introduce you to their in-country joint venture partners. Mm-hmm. It's sales. It's good old-fashioned sales.
And I would just add, you know, of course, international business takes time to develop those relationships. I think one thing that we're learning through this export initiative is that if we leverage all the connections that we now have on the steering committee, we can identify the companies that can have a real impact mm-hmm. and are at that point. Maybe they're talking with a distributor overseas, but haven't yet signed a contract, and by going on the trade mission and having a governor or a mayor along, they can get that deal signed earlier than they normally would have. You know, we're now asking the University of Minnesota, City of Minneapolis, City of St. Paul, who do you know that can truly have impact from joining Governor Dayton and going to China this June? And they're identifying companies that are in that right stage.
So you're asking the university to identify people in your own state or people abroad?
People in our own state, and then also what are our connections abroad okay. that we can
alumni.
Introduce them to?
Yeah, we've really begun to light up the alumni mm-hmm. for Portland State University and Oregon Health Sciences University. There is one caveat, and that's Brazil. We just opened our first trade office in Brazil. Because it is such a new market to us and we have so little connections there, we decided to put in-country. We have a three-person team. They're Brazilians, and, you know, they're going to, for 2 years, do a lot of that initial sourcing because we just don't have a lot of great information about Brazil.
And what do you want to sell to Brazil?
Well, Brazil is really interesting. They know that they can sell their oil abroad for a lot more money than use it at home. And their hydroelectrical power grid is about maxed out. So they are big into, and they're interested in the relationship in our businesses because we're about clean technology, we're about conservation. So they're interested in our clean technology, both services and products, not necessarily for the environment, but because they see the value proposition.
And Stefan, what is your company's next move now? I mean, do you sell the same things in a higher quantity and in more places? I mean, when you blow out this, what's your strategy?
First, I guess one of the things I want to address is, you know, they're talking about making connections. One of the things we're doing at CenterState is almost that same idea except using companies. So we've looked at our top exporting companies in the CenterState area, and almost all of them are on board with, so a lot of us that export a lot have offices or people or distributors in many of these emerging markets and countries, and we've agreed as companies to help some of these smaller companies, bring them over, make introductions. Like as an example, we sell a lot to Samsung and LG and Sony and big companies like that where we already have people on the ground that have relationships. And we have a lot of companies in our area that we don't compete with in any way, shape, or form, and a lot of our bigger exporters do as well. So we've agreed as companies who already have a lot of these relationships internally to bring along some of the smaller, medium-sized businesses.
To get a percent off of that?
No. Actually, we're looking at that from a company mentoring standpoint, and one of the recommendations in our CenterState report is to go to New York State and ask New York State for some sort of tax credit for the companies that are actively promoting and going out of their way to try to help these smaller businesses along. Now, I don't know if that's going to work or not, but I think we're at least on the same page to help other companies help grow the region as long as we don't compete. And a lot of us that are bigger in exporting don't compete in any way, shape, or form.
I want to talk about infrastructure, and Carlos can start this because there's been enormous discussion about that to be competitive and to really scale up export, we need a stronger infrastructure system. You have the largest port, busiest port in the country. How bad is it, and what do you think that we need to stay competitive? What has to happen in infrastructure?
Well, I think we need to move our goods faster. We need to connect our cities, our states, and, you know, I guess we all have that difficulty that infrastructure is lacking. I think the Port of Los Angeles, the Port of Long Beach, and today, as we speak, the Los Angeles World Airports are expanding their operations, and obviously we're going to see the results in years to come. But, yes, infrastructure is the linkage of how you move goods.
And do you see in private industry that this has become such a hot topic in this town and across the country, that in cities for private industry and for the city, that this is a drawback, that the rails aren't fast enough or that things are not up to date?
Absolutely. We're inland port city. You know, the basics of dredging, freight congestion, interstate congestion for trucks, you know, the... For those of you that work for the federal government, those of us in local government, you know, just the past couple of weeks, the transportation bill debates here have been incredibly frustrating to watch because, as was mentioned in the introduction, I mean, we are just getting our hat handed to us in terms of speed, reliability, of trip times in access. I mean, I don't know. It's hard for us. It's hard for me and to fathom why Congress is dithering.
Dithering. This is. Is there? Let's actually move to the. I was going to ask this the last question, but might as well do it now since we are in Washington and there are people here from the federal government. What are the one or two things that if this happened, if X happened, it would be so much easier for you to scale up exports in your city or in your company or in L.A. or in Minnesota? What is it that you want? You can even go one, two, or three if you want. And that doesn't have to be in order. But what needs to happen?
Why don't you go? I talk.
Carlos?
I, I do have some recommendations, and obviously, but at this moment, I'll tell you, I must take the opportunity. I'm here. I've never been at this fantastic institution, and I think I'm not going to take an advantage. So tell you a little bit about two or three programs that we're doing in Los Angeles that I think, not only to showcase what we're doing, but also it's very important that these two programs.
I'm not going to let you off the hook. You are going to tell. All right, you can tell about
but
your programs.
Also that these programs, I think, could be a model in other cities. Early today, I discussed about the America Business Forum. 3 years later, this program is quite successful. The concept of this program was very interesting. Again, looking at the fact that we were looking to help small and medium-sized companies do more exports. What we did basically is convince the Department of Commerce to have a memorandum of understanding with us. And so what we're doing now is we are bringing marketing opportunities from 14 countries in the Americas to Los Angeles. What we're trying to do is create a sense where our companies are going to be commercially visiting these markets. They're going to conduct business with 14 countries without leaving Los Angeles. So we bring the SCOs, the senior commercial officers, for 2 days to Los Angeles. Very intensive seminars, conferences, country briefings, one-to-one meetings. And again, this is without leaving Los Angeles. Our request to the Department of Commerce is to extend the MOU that we have. We have an MOU for 2 more years. But today, and maybe later, we would like to ask the Department of Commerce to also consider having an MOU, not only with us, but with other cities, to bring the SEOs from Europe and Eastern Europe to California and to Los Angeles. For us, will be very important because, obviously, those markets are also very, very, very good. But the important thing about this basic program that we have is that they provided us with some specific information about the need in the market and about a need to create a new program in Los Angeles. And this is the program that we call Export Champions with USC and UCLA Anderson.
And this is important because of state budget cuts in California, they didn't have state programs, so you actually went to the universities,
right.
Which this is also something that other cities and metro areas would be looking
right.
at.
Every year, we organize a number of seminars and conferences in Los Angeles. We have a great executives that attend the meetings, the one-to-one meetings. These executives are always amazed by the marketing opportunities in the Americas, information that they receive. But very quickly with UCLA Anderson, we realized that a large number of these executives were not developing business strategies or making executive decisions to pursue these export opportunities in the market. And the question was why? In most cases, we found out that the desire to pursue opportunities in global markets was diminishing as these executives returned to their companies, factories, and offices and realized that the day-to-day operations, domestic requirements, and local challenges they themselves had were so demanding that their international program lost its attractiveness and was placed at the bottom of the pile of things to do. Together with UCLA Anderson, we realized that the proper follow-up with these local executives was missing. We did not have the mechanism to encourage these executives to pursue export strategies. Now with the Export Champions programs, we have MBA candidates that they can, in fact, do the follow-up with these executives and assist them in the development of market research strategies to participate in global markets. Allow me just to give you an idea as to the resources, the great resources that we have in our universities. The
just
profile...
Keep, just brief, because we're okay. going to move to questions in a couple, in about 2 minutes, because we're running out of time. And then I do want to ask everybody, because, you know, we do have the Commerce Department here, and,
sure.
and it is Washington, and we have the Export-Import Bank and the Small Business Administration. And so this is your chance, kind of.
Right.
What do you need? Do you need backup help? Do you need expertise? Do you need credit? So you want to quickly finish, Carlos,
yes, very
and then we'll
quickly.
Go through this
just,
line, and then we'll open it to questions.
A lot of people have said, well, you're going to have a lot of MBA kits doing export research and programs for companies. Just to give you an idea as to the profile of MBA candidates that we have in our schools, and I'm talking about only schools in California. Average age at Anderson is 32 years old. 9 years of professional experience. Some have already earned a master's degree in engineering and science. Some students have been awarded U.S. patents. Some have law, accounting, and PhD degrees. So what we want to do is work with them to see if these young executives with 9 years of experience can help our SMEs develop some strategies to take them overseas. And obviously, our request to the government, state, federal, and city, is to provide us with more funds. As a matter of fact, we are very grateful that today we are using the STEP grant that was given to us by the SBA in these two programs with SC and UCLA.
Perfect. Thank you, Carlos. And Katie Clark, what?
I think from our perspective, you know, you've heard from some of the other groups, some of the solutions are that they've created a new export council. For our particular export plan, we're not creating a new organization. We're leveraging our state trade office, our USIAC in Minneapolis, and using those resources and budgets that are already in place, as well as the private public economic development regional group, Greater MSP. So we need continued support for those programs. We need staffing with the foreign service overseas. When we do trade missions, we rely on our commercial service partners to know their markets well and to be able to create those connections. And our companies in Minnesota rely on those experts overseas. So I would say, too, Minnesota's identified 15 priority export markets based on the industries in the state, you know, current markets that we're exporting to, as well as emerging markets that we see. Really getting the Foreign Commercial Service to have that strategic placement of commercial service specialists in the markets where we see that opportunity and that growth and the Silk Road that was presented earlier. And I think a second point, just to wrap up very quickly, continued support for the STEP grant through the Small Business Administration. This has been a huge new resource at the state level and is trickling down to the local metropolitan level as small businesses are receiving subsidies to go on trade missions, to get Ex-Im Bank resources. It's been very, very valuable, and we're looking forward to hopefully year two and year three and many more years of that program. So those are two top
right,
of mind.
And Stefan?
I think from a regulatory standpoint, I think there's one thing that I can emphasize from our business and from many businesses we deal with, and the importance is speed, 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 speed. Combining organizations is critically important, but the biggest hurdle we run into is not the regulations themselves, it's the amount of time it takes to get things approved. And the multiple agencies that it has to go through, and the multiple people you have to educate on exactly the same topic. And what that amounts to from a business standpoint is that's lead time to customers. And when you can't meet your lead times because we're going through government regulation and we're not getting quick turnaround, eventually our competitors that are overseas and not dealing with that will take our business. And we have multiple examples of this over the years where there either the sense of urgency isn't there or the understanding or there's not enough staff, or as we push to advanced manufacturing, there needs to be a better understanding from a technical standpoint of what products do and how they're used, and are they really a threat to national security, or is it just because people don't understand? So that to us is really critical. It's not that we disagree with the regulations. It's the implementation and the amount of time it takes to get through them, and that's just a big, big problem.
Mayor Adams.
Integration. If you work for a federal agency, thank you. This administration has been by far the best in getting everyone to enthusiastically work together at the federal level, but there's still a lot of work to do. Everything from giving local folks access to the case files and changing your boilerplate confidentiality form so that you include folks on the local level. And when we go through an export promotion strategy like this, you know, let us lead in a partnership with you, because we, as was said earlier, I mean, city governments, county governments, we're going to know the constituency better than you will, because we deal with them not just businesses, not just on the business of business, but we deal with them, you know, in civic life and a whole bunch of other things. So I would say package and combine, come up with scenarios, the likely funding scenarios that usually is dribs and drabs of help and financial assistance from various departments, and have some sort of pre-approved scenarios for certain kinds of business requests.
Excellent. Well, we have time now for a few questions from the floor. There's roving mics.
Thank you. Sandy Apgar, as a member of the State Department's Advisory Committee on International Economic Policy, I'm interested in how you think state, and specifically the Foreign Service, could be better equipped, could improve its capabilities to foster the export strategies that you are pursuing.
That's a good question.
I would say that it's, as I travel a lot, and I usually always go to the embassies or consulates, and the quality is from one consulate or embassy to another is not consistent with state. The staff is it can vary widely in what how active they are with the other U.S. in-country resources. I would say that there's a lot of work to do for federal agencies in various countries working much better together than they do right now, and state being the most visible presence around the world is always going to be the most visible, and I think it just needs to embrace its role as our billboard, our front door, not only for in-country but also for our own firms going over there.
Another question right here.
Thank you so much. My name is Adam Lysenko. I'm from Brigham Young University. I have a question for Mayor Adams on the topic of infrastructure specifically. You mentioned how important it is to you in Portland to bolster the competitiveness of local firms by having infrastructure renewal that is long overdue in the United States. I know that several foreign nations, most recently and notably China, have indicated that they see U.S. infrastructure as an attractive investment destination. For example, there's an Australian firm working on the D.C. Beltway right now. Do you see infrastructure funding from sources other than the national government, like China, for instance, as attractive and acceptable alternatives to federal funding?
The very Oregon answer is we don't have toll roads, and I think based on the last polling I saw from Oregonians, and we don't want them. So the cultural shift in my state would have to be pretty significant. I know there are firms around the United States that. I'm sorry, there are firms around the world. We've talked to firms out of Spain as well that do this kind of work. I personally am supportive of it. We're going to end up with tolls to build a new bridge across our Columbia River. It's been very controversial. I do think it's a resource. In some states like ours, it's a tougher thing to actually take advantage of than other states.
Okay, we have another question here, and then we'll have to end it.
Anton van Akmal. I've not heard one word that is language. Is that an issue when you go abroad, have these missions to create contacts? Is there a fear?
What we've done, one of the things that we've done recently to help address that, because it's clearly an issue, is as an example, we bought a product line from a company in China 2 years ago. We actually kept manufacturing in China. We actually moved R&D to Syracuse. And one of the things we actually did to help bridge that gap is we actually hired a student out of Syracuse University that's a Chinese national that speaks the language. She's got an electrical degree and an MBA, the perfect person to be that liaison, very technical, knows the culture, knows the language, and we just recently did it for another person from India. So that's one of the things we're doing is trying to take people from our local universities. There's a lot of people from all over the world that speak the language, understand the culture. And that is a big barrier, not just for us, but for a lot of others. And that's one of the things we're doing that I think is sometimes maybe overlooked, even though it's fairly obvious,
probably. And is your website in different languages now?
It is. And a lot of our products have software in different languages as we've had to adopt in different countries. That's one of the things that we've done, manuals, software, website in different languages.
Carlos?
Aside from language, the other thing that we find that is very important is that before we take companies to trade missions, we will organize an expert seminar before we go, because it's very important for companies to understand sales agreement, distribution agreement, and other things before they go. A lot of times they go, they meet with people, they make commitments that they cannot fulfill. It is very important to have a group of this type of seminars before we go out.
Well, and on that note, we're going to have to conclude our panel, but it was terrific discussion. And coming up next, we have Amy Liu, is going, the co-director of the Brookings Metropolitan Policy Program, is going to lead discussion with some very big shots coming up. I'll let her announce them. Thank you.
Thank you
very much.
Good job.